Welcome to Inside the Newsroom, the Sentinel Records weekly podcast from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio that takes a closer look at news and sports in Garland County. Hello and welcome to Inside the Newsroom. For a few years now, the Hot Springs City Board has had plans to construct, rehabilitate, or acquire a facility to serve as a resource center and rehabilitation shelter for the city's homeless population. The primary obstacle to this goal has been finding a nonprofit to operate the facility. At a recent agenda meeting on August 16th, the board revisited plans for the facility, including the big question of funding. With us to offer his insight into the situation is the Sentinel Records' David Showers. Welcome, David.
Hey, Andrew. Good to be here.
So, I always like to start with the biggest question, the main question, and I guess let's just get right into it. Why hasn't the city been able to find an operator for the resource center that it wants to build for the homeless population here?
Well, I think it wants to, it's talked about using its ARPA money, American Rescue Plan money. You know, cities and counties got hundreds of billions of dollars from the American Rescue Plan Act. The city got $11.37 million, and, you know, they've talked about using $4.5 million of that to build this. They call it a resource center. They don't like calling it a shelter because they see it as a place where people can come, get the resources that they need to, I guess, not have to live on the street anymore, where they can come get an ID because, you know, you can't get a job if you don't have an ID. They can come get on the internet to fill out job applications because most of the jobs today you have to have an internet connection to be able to apply for. And I think it would be about a 35 bed facility. So, you know, they've talked about building this. I don't think that they've really narrowed in on a location yet, or are they going to just retrofit an existing building or build a new building? But before they get to that point, they want to find somebody that can operate this. The city doesn't want to be the operator here. So I guess they kind of pulled some of the nonprofits around here to see if they could do that, if that's something that would be within their scope. And the answer was no. So the city doesn't have an operator. And so some of the community development block grant funds, that's the money the city gets from HUD for being an entitlement city. Well, some of that CDBG money is pandemic related. In 2020, I think it was through the CARES Act, cities that were entitlement cities got CDBG money to deal with the pandemic, and the city got close to $700,000 in this CDBG pandemic related money, and some of it they had put toward their resource center project. But because there's a spend down deadline on that, I think it's next November, the city was, and the city doesn't have an operator for their resource center, so the city had to repurpose some of those funds and put it into other pandemic-related items. And so I guess that's where they're at. They don't really have a location for their resource center, and they don't have an operator. And, you know, I think it's unlikely that they would move forward with this project if they couldn't secure an operator.
And when did they first begin devising a plan for a resource center? Because I know that Burroughs said it had been a few years, and I also, was there one nonprofit that expressed interest in the past?
I'm not sure if one had done it. You know, it's kind of a patchwork of nonprofits that help, you know, low-income and indigent people and people who are homeless here. And I don't know if you saw the letter to the editor in Sunday's paper from Cooperative Christian Ministries and Clinic. They're one of those kind of nonprofits in that patchwork. And they actually quoted City Manager Burrow, what City Manager Burrow said at the board's workshop earlier this month, where he said, we can't get the nonprofits to come together on this. And they kind of pushed back on that, you know, talking about all the coordination and effort that they do. But that, I guess, lack of coordination was one of the big things that came out in, I guess it would have been 3 summers ago in 2019, where the city hosted, I think they called it a poverty summit, which was really a reaction to the growth of all the panhandlers that we were seeing at the busy intersections in town. That was something that really got people's attention, because they kind of seemed to show up overnight out of nowhere. And that got people's attention and got people wanting the city to do something about it. So the city, you know, they tried to pass a series of ordinances to curtail that, but they all were, you know, challenged in court by the American Civil Liberties Union, and they were all, you know, the court said, no, you can't do that, because there's a whole, I guess, list of court precedent talking about how panhandling or begging is protected speech under the First Amendment. So you really can't regulate it. The city tried to, you know, frame it as a safety issue, saying you can't, you know, stop in a right-of-way and pass anything out of a car window, being very careful not to say explicitly say money, just any kind of material. But the court said, no, even if you frame it as a safety concern, it still you can't do it. So that kind of got the ball started on this resource center project, or the idea that the city needed to do something about the number of homeless people here. So that was in 2019. And I don't think the idea of actually, well, getting all this federal pandemic relief money, you know, kind of was like a one-time windfall. Well, we've got some money here and we can, you know, use it for this project that we've been talking about doing for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, with that ARPA money, there's a spend down deadline on it too. That money has to be committed by the end of 2024 and spent by 2026. So there's a window to use that money. And the city, I guess, wants to find an operator before they commit that $4.5 million to that project. You know, otherwise they could, you know, put it toward another project before the spend down deadline. And, you know, it's kind of interesting what the city manager Burrow was talking about. I think he feels like that everybody thinks this is the city government's problem. You know, city government needs to do something about this. But, you know, he's talked about how this is a community-wide issue and it's going to take the whole community to come together to solve it. And I've talked to Garland County, you know, they got more ARPA money than the city did. They got close to $20 million in ARPA money, and they still haven't spent most of it. And I've talked to them, well, you know, would you partner with the city on this project? And they didn't really seem interested in partnering up on this project, which you would think it would need a city and county approach.
So that $11 million in ARPA money the city has, I know the CDBG funds have some limitations on how they can be used. Is that the case with the ARPA money as well?
Well, there were a lot of rules when that money came out. I guess it would have been sometime last year. A lot of rules and a lot of uncertainty. So all these cities and counties were sitting on just billions and billions of dollars, and they were reluctant to spend it because they didn't know the rules and they didn't want to spend it on something. And then the Treasury Department comes back and says, no, that's not allowable expense. You got to pay us back. So what they did is they created this category, I believe it's called revenue replacement, where cities and counties can put up to $10 million into that revenue replacement fund and basically use it for any government purpose, any kind of general fund purpose. So that would be, I think that the resource center project would probably fall under that revenue replacement. So, you know, there wouldn't really be any issues about is this allowed, is it not allowed. If it's in that revenue replacement category, you know, you can pretty much use it for any legitimate government purpose.
And I believe City Manager Burrow mentioned that the estimated cost, was it the not operating cost, just construction, might be $4.5
million? Mm-hmm.
How much of the $11 million can be dedicated to that? Like, could it actually cover the costs? Or?
Well, I think the city, you know, they took full advantage and put up to $10 million in that revenue replacement fund. And the only big expenditures that they've made out of their whole ARPA money as a whole, that whole $11 million, is I think about $1.3 million in the spring to finish the replacement program for the police department's body and vehicle-worn cameras. So they have a lot of money in there, and, you know, they have, I'm sure that resource center project would be funded by the revenue replacement money, which you can use for pretty much any legitimate government purpose. But before you get there, I mean, the city wants to make sure they have an operator. They don't want to build a facility and then, oh, who's going to run it? The city's like, you know, we that's not really what we do.
And they mentioned, I think Burrow mentioned specifically, the CDBG funds not only being available for use like for soft costs. So why the even the mention of those the CDBG funds if the ARPA money would cover it, since it's such a relatively small amount?
Well, I think they moved. There would be about $400,000 in CDBG money available for that project. That's, I think, what they have earmarked now. So I'm not sure. The city, I think, just recently found out that the CDBG pandemic-related funds can only be used for, services, basically, soft costs. You can't use it for brick and mortar. I think cities and counties are learning something new every day about what they can and can't spend that money on. There was, a lot of, as you can imagine, bureaucracy and strings attached. We're talking about probably over $300-400 billion that cities and counties all over the country have gotten. And, when you get government money, they want to know how you're spending it, when you're spending it. There's a whole lot of paperwork that goes in with that. And I think it's just a kind of an evolving process of local governments learning, every day something new about that ARPA money that they've gotten, which is a huge amount of money. You look at the county got over $19 million. That's the size of their general fund budget every year. So they basically got a whole year's worth of general fund budget. The city's $11.37 million. That's like about a third of their general fund budget. So you can see why, some economists and a lot of people are saying that ARPA bill was really one of the things that's driving inflation, because look at the hundreds of billions of dollars that local governments have right now to spend, and I'm sure that's putting a lot of pressure on demand. And you can see it with this resource center project. I think when the city was talking about this at their workshop last summer, they were looking at, something half the cost, but now they think it's going to be twice as much, just because the cost of everything is so high right now, which is kind of leads into why there's a shortage of affordable housing. Is it's so costs so much to build everything or build things these days.
The borough mentioned that being kind of the, if not the primary, one of the primary issues kind of influencing the number of homeless people here in Hot Springs. Did they go more in depth on that issue, or does the city actually have kind of a plans to tackle affordable housing in this community?
Well, so I guess every 15 to 20 years, the city hires a company to do kind of a long-range land use plan. I think the one that they were operating on prior to this new one was adopted in 1997 and then maybe amended in 2010. But in 2020, the city adopted what it called its 2040 plan. That was supposed to be kind of the roadmap to how they're going to develop land over the next 20 years. So they've recently hired a company, I can't remember their name, but they're going to go in and look at the city's zoning code and basically try to align it with what's in this 2040 plan. And I think there's some talk that the zoning code needs to be updated to allow more areas for multifamily housing, apartments. When you look at the city's current zoning code, they're really only allowed by right in one of the five residential zoning districts that the city has. So that's an issue. And then in some of the other residential districts, the minimum lot size required for a home is so big that it kind of limits how much you can develop a parcel. If you can only put like three homes on a parcel instead of maybe four or five, or maybe just one home on a parcel instead of two or three, that's not, I guess, going to incentivize a developer or builder to come in. So maybe lowering the minimum lot size and allowing multifamily housing in more zoning districts. But when you do that, the people who live in those districts are going to complain. I've seen a couple of times where zoning changes that would have allowed multifamily housing to come into an area and the neighborhood doesn't like it. It's that whole, what is it, NIMBY, not in my backyard. When you look at it, I've been reading on this subject. They talk about how zoning codes all over the country were designed for the single family house, right? That's kind of like at the center of the American dream. And multifamily housing, kind of got pushed off to the side. Well, I think we were talking in the newsroom the other day. If you look at all those images of Ukraine, you see that it's just full of apartment buildings. I mean, it seems like everybody there lives in an apartment building. I was reading a story the other day about one of the Russian generals are high up. He had his own, like, he had an apartment picked out in Ukraine. I guess he thought the invasion was going to go better than it actually did, but he had picked out a specific apartment that he was going to live in, not a house, an apartment. So you look over there, their whole mindset is multifamily housing, and I don't know if they have a housing problem like we do here. I guess they probably have bigger problems in Ukraine right now. But, and our whole system is geared toward the single family house. So that's probably also a problem that maybe planners all over the country are going to have to take another look at.
Inside the Newsroom is sponsored by Reiser Ford and Lincoln. On the hunt for a new truck or car, stop by 4201 Central Avenue in Hot Springs today or call 501-525-0800 today for all your truck and car needs.
We previously mentioned the kind of the increase in the population of homeless people in Hot Springs. Has the city kind of mentioned a potential reason for this increase or?
Nothing official. I think they just all of the, I guess, circumstances that are creating this problem all over the country. You know, I don't think they know where it's coming from. I've been reading a lot about how the city of Houston has been dealing with its homeless problem. It's kind of considered like a model or a template because in the last 10 years, they've reduced their chronic homelessness population. That's people who have been homeless for more than a year or homeless multiple times by like over 60% in the last 10 years. And they do it by what they call a housing first strategy, where they, instead of, you know, putting people into shelters, they put them into apartments for like up to a year and they pay for it. And I think 3/4 of the people who have been into that program are still, you know, living in their apartment today, which is pretty impressive. And it's housing first strategy. You know, a lot of aid and assistance is tied to like people, you know, getting sober or finding religion. But in Houston, somebody said that's like asking somebody to learn to swim before you throw them a life raft. You know, they're drowning right now. They need your help. They don't need you to teach them how to swim right now. They need your help because really home underpins anything. How are you going to apply for a job if you don't have an address, if you don't have a bed to sleep in? So I think they kind of look at the home as like the underpinning of everything, and that's kind of what it's kind of the home base or the platform for becoming a productive citizen and not having to live on the streets anymore.
One of the issues that Burrow mentioned at the August 16th City Board Agenda meeting was a lack of coordination among area nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Could you go a bit more in depth on what was said at that meeting or just kind of your own insight into that?
Well, that was at the workshop meeting on August 6th. And it kind of goes back to that poverty summit that I talked about in the summer of 2019, where the city got all of this kind of patchwork, quilt work of nonprofits together to try to get them to not duplicate services so much or compete for the same grant. To work more in concert together. And I've been trying to talk to some people at CCMC to get them to address what the city said, and I guess they kind of addressed it with their letter to the editor on Sunday, but it seems like the city feels like there's still a lot of siloing going on. That these nonprofits are kind of operating in their own little silos and not collaborating enough. And this Resource Center project will take a big collaboration.
I had a conversation with Kathy Randall of St. Luke's Episcopal, and they did some cooling shelters with the Salvation Army. And I remember she mentioned kind of different nonprofits in the area, churches, kind of, she didn't use the word silo, but kind of doing their thing and kind of being good at it and not stepping on each other's toes. But I guess there is some degree of collaboration, but they really don't like the partnership between the Salvation Army and St. Luke's was news. Mm-hmm. So what kind of coordination would that take, though, like kind of a combination of these organizations or?
Well, I guess it would probably take all of them bringing their kind of specific expertise to bear But I think the issue is finding that one person that can bring them all together. I mean, if this project were to actually come off, there'd have to be a coordinator. Somebody would have to, one of these nonprofits or the city would have to hire a coordinator to kind of keep everybody rowing in unison. Maybe you could fund that through a grant. I don't know. I don't think the city would create a position and fund it with, you know, general fund money. That probably wouldn't go over too well with their constituency. So yeah, it's going to take kind of a coordinator, I guess, to wrangle all these nonprofits and get them to work together, even though I'm sure the nonprofits think that they are collaborating and working in concert, but I guess not enough for the city's liking at this point. Because they all do different things. I mean, with CCMC, I mean, they, you know, help people with their medical issues, and, you know, the Jackson House, they feed people. They all do different things, and I guess if you could get them all to work together, they'd all bring their expertise to bear, but you need somebody at the center, I guess a quarterback, kind of, to make it all come together.
The will is definitely there, it's just, but, am I correct in understanding that the city is also considering nonprofits from outside the area, and kind of what is the possibility of bringing in a non-local operator?
Right. So, I believe the city has led a request for proposals on that after the local nonprofits here said that they didn't want to operate the resource center. So I'm not sure when that RFP will come back. I think they were talking about a group called Jericho Way in Little Rock, who kind of coordinates all of their homelessness services. So I guess they're hoping maybe they'll respond to the RFP or an outside group, but it seems like if an outside group came in here, they really wouldn't understand the issues or the circumstances of the city's homelessness issue. It would seem like one of the local groups would have a better understanding of how to make that work.
It was August 16th that at that agenda meeting that the city board told Borough to put out a request for proposals, and you've kind of mentioned it, but what is the expectation for the responses? Like, can we expect anyone to respond?
I think, you know, should get at least one response. I'm sure they're probably hoping for, you know, at least three or four, but how far out are I don't know what their catchment area is here for RFPs. You know, how far out do you want to go? Little Rock, out of state, you know, who's going to do it? And, you know, it'll be a big fight if they ever do decide where they're going to put this. The people in that neighborhood are probably going to object to it. I mean, was it either earlier this year or last year that, was it called Covenant House, that rehabilitation facility over there off of Whittington? You know, they wanted to increase the capacity of it, what they were allowed to under the zoning code, and there was a lot of pushback against that in the neighborhood. You know, it's NIMBY, right? Not in my backyard.
And in your most recent article on this, Borough mentioned construction, but in a previous article, there was mention of construction, but also finding a facility that was already there, or what was, there was a third option. But have they kind of settled on the need to construct an actual dedicated facility for this?
Well, I think all of that's kind of on hold until this operator question gets answered. I don't think they're going to get to that stage yet. I've been told that they have kind of an area they're looking at, which would be, you know, right in the Jackson House area, because I guess that's where a lot of the people they would be serving kind of generally are, and I think there's a plasma donation place over there. So it would kind of be in that area they know. I think all that's on hold until the operator question gets answered, because I think the city was kind of surprised that the local nonprofits here kind of begged off operating the resource center, which would, I'm going to try to talk to some of those nonprofits here this week or next week to see why they thought that was beyond their scope or that they couldn't do a project like that.
What would be kind of expected of them? Because I know the some of the costs or some of the federal funds would go to SoftGOS potentially. but the city wouldn't be prepared to continually fund the soft running operations.
Right.
Would they?
I think one of the figures that has been thrown out is $500,000 a year. That's what it would cost to operate this facility. And the city doesn't, you know, when they don't want to commit funds to that or make that become a recurring expense. So they'd probably look for a grant to fund that, or the nonprofit who operates it, maybe a condition of their RFP would be, you know, can you muster grant funding to operate this? Or, you know, can your charitable donations operate it? Do you have the wherewithal financially to operate this facility? Maybe with the city giving a little bit of a subsidy every year. Oh, so I'm not sure if they can use CDBG money, because the city gets, you know, about $500,000 a year in CDBG money. But I don't think you can use that money for, you know, personnel or even operating costs, really. I think it's all like, you know, like engineering and architectural type services, things like that, or actual brick and mortar construction.
So I'm not very familiar with most of the nonprofits in this area, but which ones would have kind of been pegged as like hopeful potentials that the city's kind of looking at specifically?
Well, I'm pretty sure that one of the ones that they were talking to was CCMC, Cooperative Christian Ministries and Clinic. You know, their mission is just kind of really focused on healthcare, really. I don't know if they're situated to do the other parts. Then there's another group. You know, the city has put, I think, $100,000, $130,000 roughly of that pandemic-related CDBG money and some ARPA money. They've put that into rent and utility assistance, and I believe that they hired Ouachita Behavioral Health and Wellness to administer that program for them. So that would be, they're kind of, Ouachita Behavioral Health and Wellness, they're kind of the group that deals with helping people, you know, pay their rent, pay their utilities, find living situations. CCMC is the group that deals with medical problems. Then you've got with St. Luke's over here, they do their shower ministry and the warming and cooling shelters. And you said that they've been partnering recently with Salvation Army, right? You know, the Jackson House is kind of the food supplier. Every day around lunchtime, you know, they're feeding people lunch. So, yeah, it's just, they all kind of do different things, and I think they do them pretty well. But the city's issue is come together, work together, you know, because we can't do this on our own.
Well, hopefully some of them are listening now, and hopefully some of them have the ability to do so.
Yeah, because I'm confident that they want to help, but I don't know. It's a big project and a lot of responsibility to take on. And one the city probably wouldn't even consider taking on if they didn't have all this, you know, federal funding that has to be spent by a certain date. And this is kind of like it's like use it or lose it money. And this is really a big problem in town. I think it's probably the most conspicuous problem in town. You see so many people who it looks like they don't have a home to go to, and you got the money to do something about it. And this, you may not have another opportunity like this.
Well, I think that's about all the talking points I had. Thank you very much for coming on. I think this has been a really good one.
Okay, well, good. Thanks, Andrew.
This has been an episode of Inside the Newsroom from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. New episodes are released every Thursday. Thank you for listening.